You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. Come get some. See where I live.
IGN GameScoop. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week, Sam Claiborne, Brian Altano, Jared Petty.
My body is ready.
We've got a great show for you this week. We're going to talk about No Man's Sky. We're going to talk about Dragon's Lair.
Ooh.
But first, yesterday, Sony... held its, oh yeah.
That's great. I'm so happy I'm here.
Sony held its first press conference at Sony, Paris Games Week. Mm-hmm. Brian and I were on this post show yesterday. We covered a lot of the announcements, and you covered it well on Podcast Beyond this week, I'm sure. But I would love to hear Sam and Jared's takeaways from the...
We have a monthly press conference now from Sony, it seems like. How do they have so much great stuff?
I love
their press conferences every time, and I'm just like, what's going on? They just did one at Gamescom. TGS.
Sony didn't yet. So they did a smaller one at TGS.
And then of course E3.
And then they've got another one in about a month with PSX.
Mm-hmm. Two huge takeaways. First, I can now play Tekken with a VR helmet, which is all I've ever wanted in life. Ever since Pukin 2.
Are you being sarcastic?
Yes, I am.
Going
back to Bushido Blade, first-person fighting games.
Yes.
Connect two PlayStations together with a cable and play first-person sword fighting in Bushido Blade. Now, I don't quite get that one. Maybe it'll be amazing, and I'm just being short-sighted. But I am really excited about the opportunity to ride a bear around and control animals in a beautiful, beautiful world. I have no idea what wild is, but I do know that if you can make a good first impression, they just absolutely nailed it. Like, I was, like, captivated by what I saw.
Talking about the game Wild, which was reminding some of us of Space Station Silicon Valley.
I love that reference. That's so good.
Yeah, that makes me happy.
N64 game where
a little bit more polygonal.
You were a little micro bug, right? Mm-hmm. You just go into different robotic animals.
Yeah, and like what seemed to be miniature golf course like levels. It wasn't like a giant open world game or anything. There were so many dinosaurs too.
Oh yeah, lots of dinosaurs.
That's the new thing.
There's the Crytek game with dinosaurs in it called Robinson.
The Journey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and then there's the, of course, robot dinosaurs.
Horizon.
In Horizon.
Yeah. And Horizon, man. Cavemen are the new hotness, Horizon looks lovely.
It really does.
World that can only exist in a video game, you know, that gets you really excited. It's like, wow, I can go and hunt big robot dinosaurs, and it's kind of a hunter-gatherer thing, you know, you're sitting there doing what they did, but you're doing it with, like, freaking laser beams and saw blades and jetpacks and whatever else.
And you're rewarded with resources when you kill them, and you have, there's RPG stuff, so you can level up your weapons and your character. I love all of that whole loop. of gameplay sounds fantastic.
And it's original. It gets us away from the, you know, yes, sequels can be wonderful, and video game sequels can often be better than their predecessors, but man, I'm craving original IPs, and seeing a couple of really neat things like that or Wild coming, that's exciting.
Mm. Think how exciting it'll be to find out who made the goddamn robot dinosaurs. Come on, guys.
Oh, are they going to tell us?
Don't make robot dinosaurs.
Are they going to tell us?
Well, yeah, I think that's what the whole game is going
to
be
about. But I mean, humanity is well on its way to making robot dinosaurs. Now, you've seen these killer army robots that are getting made, like robot battle armor. I think we're one madman away from...
Dark future you're predicting right now,
Jared. Oh, yeah, we're done for.
I mean, Skynet made all those, like the T-800, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Man didn't make them. Right.
Yeah.
So maybe some sort of sentient AI made the robot dinosaur.
Well, sure. Stephen Hawking's been like yelling for years, you know, if he could wave his arms, he would. He's trying to warn us that like AI is maybe not such a great idea, but nobody's listening because robots are fun.
So that T-Rex dinosaur in that game screams like Godzilla and has laser beams.
Yeah.
Which you and I both like. Right. And then we talked about during that trailer how crazy it is that there isn't a Shadow of the Colossus type game where you climb giant bosses and take them out. And what if it was Kaiju?
Yes.
Like you're like a SEAL Team 6.
You brought up the idea that you're like, you have a squad, like a four player.
Like in the new Godzilla movie when they're diving into the fray. Yeah. But what you're doing is like climbing to the top of like some like rampaging kaiju and taking it out.
Trying to find
boring into the middle of it.
Yes. Oh, I love that. That sounds great.
Would play.
Mm-hmm. So that's my response to the Sony
that's
conference.
That's your takeaway from the Sony conference.
We need to climb dinosaurs and kill them with drill blades.
But that would be breaking the law because that would mean there would be a good Godzilla game, which we haven't had in...
You guys have played some good Godzilla games.
We played the Super Nintendo fighting game, which is pretty fun.
Yeah, there was a famous pair of NES games, which are like really early examples of turn-based strategy games for Godzilla. Did you know that? They're like
no.
Those revered early examples. We got to do a most influential games list because those would be on there.
Turn-based like Godzilla? Godzilla doesn't wait for people to take a turn. Well, it's Godzilla.
You play the Japanese military and Godzilla's attacking, and it's sort of like Famicom Wars with Godzilla.
Okay.
Have you ever played these?
Of course.
Well, see, I've never played these games. Do they come out here in America?
No.
Yes, they did. Godzilla games. I have them both.
I played a side-scrolling, like, brawling.
Yeah, that one I know.
No, are you talking about the hexagon-based one? Where you move it? Okay, and then you zoom in on the NES one. Okay, I'm talking about a different early Godzilla game that didn't come here. Sorry.
Wow.
Which was also strategy-based.
Who knew there were so many early Godzilla games?
Yeah. All right, I'm going to have 20 questions to guess which early Godzilla game you're talking about.
Also, that great C64 game, Movie Monsters with Godzilla, which is actually a lot of fun.
I used to see that in magazines and stuff, but I've never actually played that game. It looked beautiful.
It's fun. It's really enjoyable.
This is a tangent, but I think there was a Godzilla game that was a launch game for the Dreamcast in Japan.
That didn't come out here.
And I remember, so this is like the late 90s, I would go to a coffee shop near my house because they had internet and like, we didn't have internet at home yet. We didn't have a computer and it was like one of those TV based like web TV interfaces.
Right.
So I would get a coffee and I would log on to this like web TV and go to IGN.com and read about this Godzilla game coming to the Katana.
Wait, how
was the code name for the
How old
game.
Are you?
It was late 90s, so I was like 18.
Okay.
Wow.
Rad.
That's crazy.
I remember going on IGN and looking at giant screenshots of Majora's Mask. I saw that exact article before it came out. Recently, and the screenshots are this big. I'm holding up my finger, it's about quarter size.
That used to be all we had to decide if a game was good or
with
bad.
With resolution, it was like, you know. And that was pretty much the resolution of the Nintendo 64.
Yeah, it's true. Now, what about No Man's Sky? We finally found out the release window is June 2016.
You know how much I love summer games. I need a big open world game in the summer.
Yeah?
I'm so happy. I hope it hits that target time.
June is when E3 happens, though.
Damn it!
Yeah, that game is going to threaten my E3 productivity. I've been waiting for No Man's Sky for a long time. Some people have a problem with the idea that it might be unstructured. That's what appeals to me about it. I want to go make my own fun in a big open world. I understand and respect the argument that you should have goals, but I also disagree and just want to wander around and do fun things. And No Man's Sky is the kind of game that I used to dream about when I was a little kid. I'm like, okay, there it is, a galaxy that goes on forever, full of things for me to find.
Yeah.
Maybe it will turn out that
in Spore, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't always work out like we hope. Although you know, you could make spaceships that look like body parts and stuff like that, but that does not a good game make. Yeah.
I agree with everything you just said. I'm really excited about having hopefully an open window to play a game like that, because if that came out between games like right now, Metal Gear Solid 5 and Halo and The Witcher, like I probably wouldn't give it the time that I want to give it. Mm-hmm. I'm glad it'll be in a nice open window. But we know what else is going to be out in June, so.
I like having money. Otherwise, I might quit my job to play No Man's Sky. Like, I think I could spend.
You have that much faith in it. They keep showing the same thing.
Oh, no, I don't have it. I want to be clear. I don't have faith in it. I have faith in the dream. I have no idea if the game's going to be good or not.
My one concern is that how populated are these planets going to be? Is there going to be stuff to do? Mm-hmm. You know, they show you can like you zoom into this planet, you land, and then you get around and walk around, but there's not really anything there. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, like.
Well, yeah, I think about an MMO, a good MMO, like something like Eve, where effectively you're wandering from place to place and, you know, grinding in one way or another, or you're interacting with players in one way or another. And this could fundamentally be something along those lines, but a little less tedious, I'm hoping. We'll see.
Were you surprised to learn that the game is still 8 or 9 months away?
Not really. They pushed it back so many times that this didn't shock me at all, and they didn't want to release in the middle of this mess.
Yeah. I think it's nice to just kind of have an idea of when it's going to be here. Mm-hmm. I'll believe it when I'm playing it.
Well, we watched that Battlefront trailer. I brought up how much I want like big space battles in Star Wars. I talk about this all the time in Battlefront. And Brian mentioned that there actually are in-atmosphere battles mm-hmm. that in we really haven't seen much of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they kind of showed that in that trailer.
Which I'm a little worried about because that was my least favorite part of the beta. I love the idea of the vehicles, but actually controlling them. Yeah, well, you had the same issue, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
Well, it feels like you're separated from the battle for some reason. Like, you're in a limited area, and I don't know. It just, it feels like everything's a little bit rubber bandy.
Yeah.
And, it doesn't feel good.
The ground-based stuff I was cool with, like the you know, AT-ST chicken mm-hmm. walkers were walking around perfectly fine. But the second, like, I would get a perk that would pop me into the air, I would I would pretty much be like, I don't know what to do. And what I ended up doing was what I used to do in a... Yeah, what I used to do in Rogue Squadron, which is basically I would if I figured like I had extra lives and I would just drive headfirst into the AT's heads and explode.
And unfortunately, unless they have their shields down, it doesn't do anything.
Yeah, it's kind of tragic.
So if your team doesn't know what they're doing, you're just like kind of flying in this loop, waiting for them to take down the shields.
The Battlefront beta fighter combat was reprehensible.
Reprehensible.
Yeah, wow. It was awful, especially in light of what Battlefront 2 was 2.0. able to do.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the single most
unforgivable. A war crime? Would you call it a war crime?
I think so. I think we should call the Hague.
It's a Star War crime.
Star War. Nice.
That's a good series for us to start. Terrible Star Wars game. Star War crime.
I think that if in the full version there's some sort of tutorial where I can get down with actually the flight controls a little bit, because this was more like I'd be playing for 14 minutes on Hoth and they'd be like, you get to fly in a Y-wing, and I'd pop up in the sky and I'd get shot down immediately because I didn't really have time to figure out anything. Mm-hmm. So if I could sort of on my own, you know, fly around, do a little free flying,
it doesn't figure things out. I hopped into a vehicle every chance I got.
Really?
It's just terrible. It's just really badly put together.
It's not good.
Yeah.
Get it together.
Yeah, get it together, guys. Get it together.
Well, that game is out in less than a month.
Please get it together quickly.
All right, that's enough. That's enough Sony stuff. This week, they announced a Dragon's Lair the Movie Kickstarter with Don Bluth, famous director and animator, sort of running the show.
Of Five Will Goes West.
Yes. American Tale, All Dogs Go to Heaven. The Land Before Time.
Mm-hmm. A bunch of knockoffs. That was probably the most popular movie he made.
Land Before Time?
Secret of Nim, pretty awesome.
Yeah, I did Secret of Nim. But, I mean, maybe Dragon's Lair might be his most well-known.
Dragon's Lair with Dirk the Daring. Yeah. You walked into any arcade that year, and just that attract mode would boom through the room.
Dragon's Lair was like 1983, I want to say.
Yeah, 83, 84, right around there.
And so if our younger viewers aren't familiar with it, this is a game that was put on Laserdisc, mm-hmm. so they were able to put all this very fancy hand-drawn animation into the game. So it literally looks like a cartoon.
Yep.
The controls are very simple. Mm-hmm. You're basically just like pushing in the direction of flashing things. So
you're
that
choosing
you don't...
a track on the
you're essentially
big CD.
Controlling a DVD menu.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of like Simon. That's why you've got four directions and a fire button, and the flash on the screen indicates one of those. But you have to be quick. It's not. That sounds really easy. But it screws with you several different ways. It can flip the screen sometimes. You don't know where the flash is going to come from.
Well, and the best thing about Dragon's Lair is dying.
Yeah,
and every time you die, there's these incredible animations of you being like fried or like zapped or eaten by some monster that you didn't see, that you finally get to see what the monster looks like when it eats you. I love that about the game.
Yeah.
And so it was really expensive at the time. It was 50 cents or sometimes $1.
I think that was the first arcade game I encountered that was 50 cents. Right. Yeah. Like, whoa.
So and like, also that you really just wanted to watch those things happen.
Yeah. Those two quarters vanished fast.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And the game's hard. Fast. It's really hard. Now, I remember when I was a kid, I watched a guy play all the way through with somebody who was really good. And I was just like, floored. Although it probably, you know, ruined the game for me because I didn't play it nearly as much after that. After seeing like what went into, but yeah, Sam's right. I think one of the great secrets of Dragon's Lair is it rewarded you for dying. Yeah, it was expensive and those quarters went quick, but it was almost fun to die.
Yeah,
maybe not in the same place every time, but again, some of the randomization helped with some of that.
Yeah,
you know, I love that game so much that when it came out on Sega CD, when I was, you know, 13 or 14, I had to have it. And I totally got it for Sega CD and finally beat Dragon's Lair that way. And it was like, you know, a terrible low-resolution version of it. But I loved it to death. And like, now I know that game. I know every scene in it. And I just, like, love it. And I'd love to revisit that universe in a short movie.
How long really does cool. it take to finish that game?
I think it's like maybe half an hour.
Really?
I thought it was more like 15 minutes.
But yeah,
you, well, you can watch YouTube videos, but I just died all the time. So
right.
Yeah.
I so can't remember continuing like a clean playthrough of it.
Interesting.
There's, but, there's hard parts. Even if you know what you're doing, there's definitely really neat hard parts. And man, the enemies and the things and the concepts get more and more creative. It's so cool. There's a really neat chess scene. There's like a knight that hits the ground with a sword and electricity goes around as a boss fight. There's like a scene where it's just balls rolling back and forth. You have to get through. And then in the end, you have a dragon like surrounded by gold and Daphne's in there. And you have to like sneak around this dragon just like The Hobbit. I mean, it looks so much like the Disney Hobbit movie. And oh man, such a beautiful, fun game.
It's got that wonderful quality that Don Bluth's animation has that has an almost grotesque flavor to it. Everything's kind of a little elongated and very fluid. And that's what excites me about seeing this as a movie. I just think that the art in Dragon's Lair works really well for a motion picture. It's like the pitch is like they're doing like a short, like with this budget, right?
They're asking for $550,000, which obviously is not enough money to make a full-length animated film. Mm-hmm. But that's going to be used to make a teaser that they can pitch to movie studios
right.
for their funding.
Oh, so, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a weird way to start a movie, but
I mean, so
I
like,
guess that's the way you do it.
Inside Out, a CGI animated movie this year, cost $175 million to make. So they need a lot more than $500,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, Don Bluth worked on a Tapper game.
Is that true?
Yeah, on iPhone, iPad. It was like just a remake of Tapper, but he did all the art.
Nice. Did that ever come out?
Yeah, it came out. I didn't think it looked really that great.
I would watch a Tapper movie.
Yeah. Tapper movie, yeah.
About a disgruntled
bartender. That's basically what Wreck-It Ralph was.
Yeah, actually, if you think so, they put that scene in there.
I was going to say Cocktail with Tom Cruise.
100%.
So are you guys going to back this?
What's that?
Are you going to back it?
I have not backed it. I want to point out, so in 24 hours, they did $62,000.
Okay.
So they didn't exactly like smash their goal in 24 hours. So I don't know. I don't know what that means.
Well,
still have, whatever, 28 days, 29 days.
I think the game is just outside of the window of most modern gamers, or very much outside of the window of most modern gamers.
Oh, yeah.
And I think like, the idea of backing something that's only going to make a trailer that will get pitched to a movie theater is, or to a movie, not a movie theater.
That trailer could be really cool.
Yeah.
Maybe if, like, if all we got was like a 2-minute trailer for Dragon's Lair movie, that might satisfy me.
Yeah.
Because I don't know, like, an hour and a half of Dragon's Lair, of Dirk the Daring, like, not talking and... You're not going to be able to see him get killed, which is one of the big draws of the game. So
it needs to be a Saturday morning cartoon.
Yeah,
yeah.
Or maybe they figure out some plot hook where he can die over and over again. I mean, maybe that's the gimmick. You just get to watch him die horribly 100 different ways.
Dragon's Lair and Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Sort of put
there we
together.
Go. Put together.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Sold. Yeah, I'm backing that.
You are backing it.
Yeah, I'm going to back that.
Okay.
Is one of the rewards of Dragon's Lair lunchbox? Because they made those, and I've always wanted one.
One of the there are like lapel pins, and like you can actually, I think one of the rewards if you donate several hundred dollars is an animation lesson with Don Bluth.
Oh wow!
Wow.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool.
I wish I had several hundred dollars.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Anyway, I'll keep an eye on the Dragon's Lair Kickstarter. I don't know if that's going to be able to reach its goal or not. We'll see. Let's check in with listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Thank you. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com, just like the Lord of Pigeons did. And he says...
It's a good job.
Jared, have you been dethroned?
It's kind of like being a rat king.
Does he run that pigeon high school from from How to Foot Boyfriend?
I don't know.
Okay.
He says, hello, I'm a big fan of the show. Thank you for answering my question. Launch titles aren't always the best, and with the NX coming next year, I'm very interested in what the Big N are going to do with this new hardware. What do you hope the launch titles will be, and do you think we'll see any pack-in titles, such as Nintendo Land or Wii Sports?
What do I hope for the console's success, or just what do I greedily want for myself? Because if it's the latter, then just give me my 2D Metroid game. Give it to me.
Or pack-in Zelda.
Yeah. What do you hope the launch titles will be?
Okay,
let's answer that question.
Give me my 2D Metroid game. Obviously.
You want that to be a launch title?
Absolutely.
Sorry, pack-in title.
He's asking, what do you... hope the launch titles will be, and do you think there'll be a pack-in title?
Right.
So two answers. First, there darn well better be a Pac-Man title, and it really ought to be
darn
good.
Well.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. I
mean, or what?
Well, I think, or otherwise,
the King of Pigeons declares.
There ought to be one. Yeah. No, I think about Wii Sports and its success, and Super Mario Brothers. In both cases, those launch titles as Pac-Ins. Super Mario.
Did the
World.
Wii originally launch with Nintendo Land? I don't even remember.
Yes.
Yeah. I bought the Wind Waker bundles.
No, it launched with Nintendo Land bundled then.
Yeah, which I do not like at all. Yeah.
It's got some good stuff in there. There's some fun. You played.
I mean, I like the Donkey Kong game. I played that game at preview events a lot more than I ever played it at my house.
I tried really hard to like that game, but I didn't like most of it. There are neat things in there, I agree.
Yeah.
But there could have been. But a nice pack-in launch title has, generally speaking, been good for Nintendo. So I understand they want to make more money and have a one-for-one. They want to do the Super Mario 64 thing, maybe, where they sell the game alongside the console and that's bet more money for them. But yeah, a great pack-in title. I mean, throw Zelda in the box, good lord, how many
do
you sell?
Yeah, that'd be huge.
But they always aim for a wider audience in their pack-in title, but like, that used to not matter as much with Super Mario World and Super Mario Brothers. I would love to see just a mainline Mario game just packed in with a Nintendo system.
Yep.
Like, you get it, and what you get with it is this cutting-edge, graphically intense Mario Galaxy-level surprise Mario game.
Yeah, like Mario Galaxy 3? I mean, is that what you put in there?
Or? I don't want to play any more Mario Galaxy. I want something bigger
and
better.
When you say mainline Mario, what do you want that next one to be?
I would love it to be like a Mario 64-type game where you're exploring a large mystery area full of secrets, but then also those lead to levels. That's like my favorite mix of Mario.
Yeah, me too.
Even in 2D.
Although I love 3D World and I love the Galaxy games. If we were to get another sequel to those, I wouldn't be upset about it. I wouldn't be as excited if we had gotten or were to get what Sam's pitching. Because I think that is my favorite. That was one of the first real open world games I ever played was Mario 64.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of people don't really consider it that, but it totally is.
You often point out that Legend of Zelda.
Yeah.
It's an open world game.
It totally is, yeah, for the Nintendo Entertainment System.
So yeah, an exploratory 3D platform.
Your parents Mario helped you set
my 2D Metroid, a Zelda. Another one. I would love to see a sequel to Super Mario Brothers 2, desperately.
Super Mario Brothers 2.
Yeah, the Clono is probably the closest anybody ever got to doing that, working with those kind of jumping on top of things mechanics. That's not been explored much afterward. You can jump on top of almost anything in Mario.
So wait. Hold on.
You
can
do that every game.
There's a very big difference between like the absolute games that I would want to see, and one of them would be a sequel to the quirky platforming game where you throw vegetables at ninjas.
There were so many.
Or a 2D Metroid, but like Nintendo needs some stuff that'll move units.
No, I'm talking about
they need to sell consoles at the gate.
No, this is not my business strategy for Nintendo. This is what I want.
I want a Nintendo that's around for a long time.
Yeah. Okay. Well, if we want a Nintendo that's around for a long time, throw Zelda in the box and give me seven new Mario games. I mean, that's probably what you have to do. But no, I'd like to see him go back and revisit. I'd like to see again. This isn't going to sell units, but I want to see another Pushmo. I love Pushmo.
What about Crashmo and all the other Mo's?
Million seller Pushmo.
I want Joy Mecha Fight to come back. And
Joy Mecha Fight.
You're gonna you are the Homer Simpson car. You're gonna tank their company.
These are some of the things. They do so much well.
Uh-huh.
And of course, I mean, yeah, we can sit here. Sam's absolutely right. Mario 64 style game would be extraordinary. I mean, just extraordinary. That needs to happen. I just don't want to see them completely lose touch with that funny little R&D one quirky side they have.
I agree. I totally agree.
I got one for you. Launch title, since we think it's going to be some kind of a digital device that you can carry with you and play on the go, or you can play on your TV, there's going to be things like the Wii U gamepad has, but everybody's probably going to have one. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe you want to bring those over and share them more. Maybe 4 players will have them. Anyway, my point is, I want to play a WarioWare game where everybody has weird controls and can do stuff like in 4 player again.
Yeah.
I really miss that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so this is a tough situation, right? Because like we want them to launch a system that's comparable to current gen, or at least beyond that.
It has industry-leading chips.
Industry-leading chips, yeah. But, I mean, to Nintendo, that's sort of
Cool
just,
Ranch.
You know, who knows what that... Yeah, Cool Ranch Doritos. So I want to see something that basically they can put out that can say, this is why you need to buy this system. And I don't know if that's going to be them sort of like, you know, wedging themselves into a gimmick of some sort. Like, the gamepad was a gamble that I don't think truly paid off, and if only because they didn't really ever do a lot of stuff with it that said, this is why you need it. The Wii remotes, on the other hand, you know, right off at the gate with Wii Sports were something that people really understood. But if they go, here's a really good-looking game, We have those. Mm-hmm. You know, if, oh, here's a good looking Nintendo game. We have those. Like Mario Kart 8 looks beautiful. Is gorgeous. Yeah, it's absolutely gorgeous game. Like Pikmin 3, gorgeous game. You know, I don't think anybody looked at those games and said, "I wish these looked way prettier."
Yeah, you know, with a quarter of the RAM, Mario Kart of competing consoles, Mario Kart 8 arguably might still be the best looking.
I think so. I mean, it's very beautiful for a number of reasons, but I think that they really need something that A, looks great, that can get the, you know, all the fanboys of really good graphics and mm-hmm. people like us on board, but also something that will bring people together and let them know that this is not just another PS4 or an Xbox One.
I want my Pokemon MMO again. While we've got the handheld,
seem like and, that and something ability, like that would yeah. be huge.
And the ability, if we are going to be able to carry the NX's controller with us, so we got our Pokemon MMO with online components, but the same game has a thing where I can carry my controller around with me and I run into my buddies.
And Street Pass,
I can
stuff.
Street yeah. Pass or even battle right there.
There you go.
And then it reflects in the MMO. And there's things I can only unlock by playing with my friends, yep. but there's things I can only unlock by playing online.
See, that's the businessman coming out. Okay, that's what I want to see. Yeah,
there we go.
You're trying to tank
I
him
know
earlier.
No microtransactions.
Pushmo.
Pushmo. Joy Mecha
I want the best looking
fight.
Pushmo game ever made.
Joy Mecha Fight, man. It's tragedy that wasn't on our top mm-hmm. 120.
You get it. I feel the same way about Clu Clu Land.
Yeah, Clu Clu Land.
Keep a straight face.
Yep.
Urban Champion.
Urban Champion HD. That's going to move units.
Urban Champion and Clu Clu Land are bad games. Joy Mecha Fight is actually a really good game.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know a River City
I
game?
I don't agree with that.
Just you came
don't
out agree? On PS4.
What?
It's like River City Sports.
A River City Ransom sequel?
No, it's just like a River City sports game set in River City Ransom universe. It just came to PS4 this week.
So they really cleaned up the city.
Yeah.
No, in Japan, that's not weird, though, because they'd had a lot of sports games. Like Ganbare Dunk Heroes was a 4-player River City Ransom game on the Famicom. It's great, by the way, but it's a basketball game.
Yeah.
Really good.
Well, Tecmo, that made all the... Is it Tecmo that
What's
made
that? They made those, yeah, Tecmo.
So they made Super Dodgeball and Super Spike V-Ball. Which were like so the same looking characters, those kind of chibi tough guys.
Right.
Did I say
Tecno? I think it's Technos, wasn't it? Was it Technos, not Tecmo?
Technos.
Yeah.
I just want those teenagers to put down the sporting equipment and go back outside and pick up the chains and start beating the hell out of each other.
Yeah.
I just want an actual. I want a new, for real. River City Ransom game, and not one where they're playing basketball.
To launch the Nintendo NX.
The NX.
That's the Warriors PS2 game, remember that?
Yeah.
The Scott Pilgrim game is almost that.
Oh, I really, really like that. I really like that game.
Yeah, that was really good. All right, our next question comes from Charlie Savage, which is a really good name.
Yeah. Wow, it
sounds like a character in a Tarantino film.
I think you should go by Chuck Savage.
Chuck Sav. He says, my friends and I are starting a retro video games podcast in November called the Flashback Arcade Podcast. For our website, middleofnowheregaming.com. It's a free plug for you. However, we've been debating about what constitutes a game to be retro. We've had arguments from the Super Nintendo Genesis era up to PS2, Xbox, GameCube generation. What do you guys think makes a game retro, and how much time has to pass for one to be considered retro?
I like the 10-year threshold because that's about a generation of gamers there. You know, you get two to three console cycles overlapping in that period of time, depending on which part of video game history you're talking about. I think if you're talking 10 years, you're talking about it. Yeah.
That would include PS2, Xbox, GameCube.
Absolutely, because I think that somebody who's 20 years old is tremendously different than somebody who's 10 years old experiencing these games. And that's.
I think you mean two console generations.
Yeah, right? I meant two.
Yeah, 10's not going to work.
Yeah, but I like 10 back.
So 20 years and two console generations.
I'd say anything 2006 or before, or 5 or before right now, roughly, would be retro.
I really think PS1, Nintendo 64 is the cutoff at this point.
At this point? Yeah.
I don't think Xbox, PS2 would count.
Let's perform an experiment. Does Knights of the Old Republic feel like a retro game to you?
It does to me. Yeah. Absolutely. There's
so here's the thing you have to consider with starting a new podcast, though, is that we are old people.
Yeah.
And you want to appeal to an audience, the same audience we want to appeal to, by talking about retro games maybe that are more relevant to them, so the games they played up, grew up playing. And those would include, I would say for sure, PS2 era games. I would think Grand Theft Auto 3, fair game. I would go for that.
I've heard people in interviews here at IGN be like, I love the new games, but I also love the old school games, like God of War 2.
Yeah.
No, like, but what?
That's a long time. Okay,
it's a long time, yeah.
We're accepting of that. We love celebrating those retro games because for us, those were maybe at the beginning of our careers, but they're still a long time ago.
Yeah, and you do want to hire people that have younger sensibilities sometimes, and us old farts who are just like, oh, let's make another Clu Clu.
If you were 9 years old when Wii Sports came out, you're 18 now. You're old enough to be nostalgic about it. I mean, that's
true. That's so half your life.
In producing content, I think definitely you would want to make a retro show that maybe incorporates more than what the oldest games are. And you have a bigger audience.
Yeah. But do dip back into that deep past as well, so that you can talk it contextualized. I mean, that's where the old video game history
that's what's
really
important.
Powerful. It provides context.
If you're talking about GTA 3, go back and talk about the earliest open world games.
Yep.
Talk about the roots of GTA and violence in games and stuff like that. That's what makes those topics interesting in a retro gaming discussion. You can't just talk about how great it was at the time. You have to contextualize it with the history of games, and I think that's what makes things really interesting.
So what do we land on? 15 years?
It's a little gray.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you this. Why do we call older games retro games, but older movies classic movies? They're not like retro movies.
I love classic games. I think that's a good term. But
You know,
well, we also call older bad movies older movies.
I think
like
things...
Old, like bad, okay, like Suburban Commando, with starring Hulk Hogan.
That's
a terrible film. one's ever been like, what a classic.
So the concept of retro is a little bit tied to the same kind of idea where it's a couple decades past. So for us, retro... Like, if you say, like, retro style, it's going to be 90s, 80s, and not really 70s anymore. But if you said retro in the 90s, it's probably going to be 70s, late 60s.
Right.
I think that's what retro is always kind of tied to older clothing and older styles. And for games, like, they kind of started in an era where people started saying the word retro.
Yeah, and I don't think Retronauts heard either. I mean, the fact is that was a really popular show for a few... It still is popular. But when it first launched, it had a pretty large viewership and listenership. It went up, and... I think that probably helped propagate the term in the gaming subculture.
Mm-hmm. Who's the guy that did the song in the 90s where Eddie Vedder sang and the chorus was, the kids of today should defend themselves against the 70s.
Was it Temple of the Dog?
No. Do you guys not remember that song?
I do remember that song. I remember who sang it.
It was like Eddie Vedder was doing guest vocals on that song.
Right.
I have
and the
no
chorus
idea.
Just repeated that over and over again. Man.
Sounds like a Lonely Island.
I'm not going to look it up. I want one of the viewers or listeners to let me know. I'm going to wait for you. Counting on you guys. Our 20 questions suggestion this week comes from Joshua. Everyone knows how this works. You have 20 yes or no questions.
Have you played?
To guess.
Yeah, I'm terrible at this.
This right, mystery
that's why
game.
Me back.
Justin's gone too. Oh man.
You may begin.
All right. Well, he folded his paper up like 1/4 of the way, so we know it's a really long title.
Okay. All right. So cool.
Was this game made before the year 2000?
Yes.
All right. There we go.
Was this game on a Nintendo platform?
Yes.
Ah, excellent. Was this game originally released in cartridge format?
Yes.
All right.
Although, you may have just burned a question, because was there a Nintendo
disk-based
system before the year 2000?
It could have been an arcade game, but I pretty much just wasted a question.
Yeah, you narrowed it down to maybe not being one of the 764 DD
games. Was it released before 1990?
Yes.
What did you say?
It's before 1990, so it's an NES game.
Sorry, dude.
Or a Game Boy game.
All right.
Was it a handheld game? Or yes. Was it a handheld game?
No.
Okay. So
was it?
Just ask if it's on the NES.
Was it on the NES?
Yes.
Was it a first party game?
Yes.
Okay.
Did it? was it a sports game?
No.
And we said NES, so we know
there's a lot of
yeah. There's a lot of those.
All right.
Was it part of the original Black Box series of games?
Yes.
Oh, that okay. Well,
and not a sports game. So.
Okay.
Is racing a sport?
Well, he would count. He's pretty good with that.
Yeah,
he
it's not Tony Hawk bike. It's not Shalom. It's not okay. So
Tony Hawk himself is a sport.
All right. Yeah. So the Black Box series was
volleyball,
Donkey Kong,
Schlucoland,
yeah,
Urban Champion
was one
tennis.
Of them.
Tennis.
Let's see.
Slalom,
Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah. So I don't know. Let's see. What
Urban Champion?
Was it a platforming game?
Kind of.
Falling in a manhole doesn't count as a platform.
Balloon Fight.
It could be Balloon Fight. Yeah, that makes sense. But once we guess the game, we're screwed, so we have to narrow it down.
Do you ask if there's balloons in it?
Does this game strongly resemble Joust?
No.
Okay, there we go. It's not Balloon Fight.
It's 11.
Let's see. So it's not Balloon Fight.
Do you play as a human in it?
Yes. Well, now, hold on. The main character of the game is a human. But I don't think you, the player, are supposed to be human.
Okay.
Gyromite.
Yeah, that would make sense. Or Stack Up. Yeah.
Is it a game that involves the ROB?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So is it a Gyromite or Stack Up?
It's not Stack
Up. Are you
up.
Stacking things up in this game?
No.
All right. It's not going to be Stack Up.
Are you Gyromite?
Is it Gyromite?
Yes, it's Gyromite.
Wow! Awesome.
15 questions.
That was really.
So I didn't want to mislead you with the Black Box series. I don't know if that was ever available standalone?
It was. It I have was. An instruction manual yeah. for it. Yeah, yeah, it's a rare one, but
okay.
you yeah. can buy it separately. You can even cool. buy the RB separately.
That was a really good one. That was
Gyromite, launch title for the NES, 1985. Puzzle platformer, I guess. Yeah. But yeah, like, you controlled it with Rob, so I think you're supposed
yeah,
to be Rob.
What are you?
See, if you narrow... Yeah. If
you're Rob picking up these spinning discs.
I think you're actually the assistant to the scientist.
You're a little scientist running around.
No, he moves independently.
He moves on his own.
You just move the pillars.
It's kind of the first auto,
like Lemmings. It's like Lemmings. Game. Yeah.
If you can narrow down the NES games to first party or black box or not black box, it's pretty easy from there.
Yeah.
Because Nintendo had a certain chunk of first party games on the NES that were not black box games.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of them were.
Yeah. The sports question was really good.
Yep.
That cuts about half of those.
So right many now. Of those black
sort
box
of baseball,
games.
Baseball, tennis.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, sports games, you know, the rules are golf. Already defined. So you just you don't have to design the game. You just have to.
They made
it,
Mike Tyson's Punch Out kind of look like a black box game.
Yeah.
Right, oh, man. But it wasn't.
I love that game. I love Punch-Out so much.
Mm-hmm. It's a good one.
Thanks for the suggestion, Joshua. We have a few minutes left today. Great. What have we been playing recently? I'm still obviously playing Metal Gear Solid 5. By the way, everyone at my at Mother Base is sick, and the levels of my groups keep going down. Do I have to do something? Or
yes.
Let's solve it?
Yes.
What do I have to do?
Jared, let me know ahead of time. There is something in common with all those people that they keep hinting at. Should we? I mean, I guess it's a spoiler, but like it's
I
a.
I couldn't
it's
tell
a,
if they.
I'm just gonna give you a hint.
Okay.
It's a language.
Yeah. So I need
so
have to learn
to be
language.
Able to look. No, you have to be able to look at you. Have to press a button to look at their other stats and see what language it is. All the people that are sick have in common.
Yep.
Okay.
And then you have.
And then you quarantine them all. Quarantine it takes button. Like a half an hour.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or
wow.
The other and if you, the,
and then
that's
it'll tell you
it.
You did.
The
it's like looks like you solved
is
the
to stop doing side ops, stop doing things between missions, and
go.
Barrel to mission 29. Just run sprint to
I'm
mission
at, like,
29.
Mission 25. Right
yeah,
now,
sprint to mission 29. Don't
yeah,
do
if you dawdle
else.
While your people are sick, it gets worse and worse.
Yeah.
That sounds way better than spending a half an hour corralling everybody.
Well,
in
for maximum efficiency,
zone.
You do both.
Yeah, I did both and I lost like two people.
Right.
You're kind of past that, so maybe race towards it. I don't know. I thought it was fun trying to figure out the mystery.
I just couldn't tell if it was going to resolve itself on its own when I hit a certain story mission, or I
and
could
it will.
Do
you mm-hmm. will hit it, yeah. But the longer you wait to
but
get
like
to the end
missions.
Of that story mission, the more people will die.
Okay.
So. Yeah, it's irritating. I'm trying to do S ranks right now.
Yeah.
And,
you, have you
and
beaten
some of
the
them
game,
are really hard.
You...
A one? Well, yeah. No, I haven't because I haven't decided whether I want to make this big decision at the end of the game. That's
right.
A secret of it. I don't want to talk about.
Also, just go ahead and check the guide for Mission 29 because screw that mission.
I'm also playing Zelda.
Triforce Heroes
by myself, which is really sad and difficult, and I don't like it, but I'm still playing it.
I don't think it's that sad and difficult. I think it's either really fun and thrilling or incredibly frustrating.
It's so
and
frustrating.
It's always one or the other, moment to moment.
Wow.
But with other people, it's a blast.
Yeah, it's really fun with other players. I'm not wild about the way they set this game up, that you can't just play like. Two players local with one computer-controlled character or, like, one you know, totem or dummy-controlled character. But in single player, you are a living Link with these two deadweight, basically driftwood Links that you have to keep carrying from place to place and throwing onto objects and stacking up. Which
and you can't call them to you.
Yeah.
You have to go run back and pick them both up and then carry them all the time.
Very
it's like
odd
a
design.
Constant escort mission.
So which is worse, the two deadweight Links or the AI and your squad members in Halo 5?
No, those are very similar.
Yeah.
I beat Halo 5 also. That was another game I played recently. Yeah. Just to finish up with Triforce Heroes, I dressed like a princess in it for a long time because it's very helpful.
You get a lot of hearts.
Yeah. And then I dressed like an Eskimo just now on ice levels. And it was
nice. Excellent.
You build costumes out of it. In and out of crafting materials, so
there's
all these. But you don't get to play as Zelda. You just look exactly like Zelda once you put on Zelda's outfit.
Yep,
right.
But you're still Link. They confirmed that.
Yeah. No. There's no way you could put girls in the game.
Of course not.
Is that what you're playing?
Yeah, pretty much that. Some random stuff here and there, but
Halo 5, working.
We found all the skulls.
We found all the skulls. Thanks to Miranda, who just did incredible work on that. But yeah, we've been working on the Halo 5 guide and playing Halo 5, and honestly, not liking Halo 5 all that much. Unfortunately.
The skulls were really well hidden, and it was a community effort. But our wiki definitely had all the skulls first, and I was really proud of that.
Yeah,
this time.
Skulls and intel.
A bunch of people submitted them to us, and we found them. They were so hard to find.
Yeah.
There's this one. You have to play on Legendary, which is a stupid caveat because you have to shoot down a ship in
it. Yeah, not for every skull, but for this one.
Yeah, for this one, you have to play on Legendary. And when you play in Legendary, it makes a ship weaker so you can shoot it down. And it's way in the distance. And you have to, like, shoot it down while it strafes by. And then the skull appears in one of three places. Like,
How in the world? Yeah, and it's weird. It's not just like a spaceship that's like flying over and shooting at you. It's just one of those background events. Yeah, it looks like you can't even interact with it.
And they took a long time to shoot it down.
Yeah, oh, it's
because
not easy
to were playing on normal, and then we realized, you have to do it on legendary, and then all of a sudden it just blows up right away.
But yeah, so that single player campaign not really good. The multiplayer is really, really neat. Especially, I really like Warzone. And I've heard a lot of good things from people who are playing. People are playing SWAT, which hasn't grabbed me the same way, which a lot of people are enjoying. Yeah. But yeah, it's been Halo 5. What about you? What are you playing, David?
Well, Metal Gear Solid 5. But I also put a few hours into Divinity Original Sin Enhanced Edition, and I like it a lot. That is like a really cool, deep, classic RPG with like, I just love the options that you have. In, you can approach situations any number of ways.
That'd be cool on 3DS.
Yeah, that would be a good game, actually, for 3DS. But I can tell that the game is going to be a really deep rabbit hole, so I think I'm actually going to wait until I'm done with Metal Gear I can actually...
That means you're never going to go back to it.
I mean, that's true, because we have Tomb Raider and Fallout 4 coming up. But I think Divinity Original Sin is a really,
man,
really
we
got to cool
get done
game.
With Metal Gear before Fallout. That's a big problem.
So are you going to play Tomb Raider before Fallout?
I think that's so, just because it's going to be such a shorter
experience.
Somebody's got to do it.
I don't know. I think Tomb Raider might be pretty big, too. I mean, it looks like
there's no way it's going to be as big as Fallout, though.
I hope the sneaking's kind of interesting and good, and I like how they're showing like you up in trees and shooting down from the
trap setting stuff is really cool.
What do you think of the goofy stuff Metal Gear, that they're adding, like the exploding chickens?
It's not for me.
Yeah.
Like, and I love slapstick stupid stuff in video games, but it's
weird in Tomb Raider.
I actually really like the serious tone of the first one.
Yeah.
Like, just that constant struggle of, like, everything's out to kill you and terrible. Like, that was really cool.
I like goofy stuff like that when it's optional. You can stumble onto it, or if
it's
part of the game.
It's like a pre-order bonus.
So. Yeah, and again, in Halo, there's, like, these vending machines you can find. If you press the right button on them, like, a saw falls out, like a huge gun, and children go, like, yay! You know, so that's cute. Mm-hmm. But it's in a corner, you know, it's not the...
Yeah, it's weird to have an exploding chicken gun in Tomb Raider. But, I mean, video games, are that's... It's what we do. It's where we are.
Yeah.
Inherently pretty dumb.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I think that's all the scoops we have for you this week. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Jared.
Thank you.
Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@IGN.com. My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop. We're out.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.